An evil is coming that threatens our kingdom, our freedom. But we have a weapon. They are not prepared for.
My king, the Europeans wish to conquer us. They will not stop until the whole of Africa is theirs. We must fight back for our people.
Maniska, you are asking me to take them to war.
Some things are worth fighting for. Don't know.
You are now entering Film Gun.
I seen it.
You're fond of me, lobster.
Molly, you in danger, girl.
Your ass looks like about 150 pounds of chew bubble gum, pile. You know that? Say it, sir!
I don't believe you people.
What do you mean, you people?
What do you mean, you people?
Now answer my question. Were you rushing or were you dragging? Answer!
I loved it.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Film Kill. My name is Phoenix Cloudin, and I'm joined by our very special guest this week. Returning to Film Code for the first time this season. You know him, we know him as our season one code-breaking champion himself. Welcome back, Mr. Nathan Pig. Nathan, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Phoenix. It's glad to be back. It's an interesting one, right? It's interesting coming back to something that you helped build, but I'm happy to be here, happy to be talking this with you guys. So thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Always happy to have you. And our current leader on our code breaking list this season, Mr. Brandon, sir. How you feeling? Probably good.
I am good. And you should drop the word current, because I will be the champion at the end of the season. Just putting that out there. But no, it's good to be back. Another week where I haven't had a chance to watch any movies other than the one we're talking about. Just life has been so busy lately. But yeah, enough about me. Nathan, it is good to have you back on for an episode, bud. It's good to see you.
Thanks, Brandon. Appreciate it, man.
Yes. And what an interesting episode to have Nathan back on. We are talking about The Woman King, starring Viola Davis, Lashana Lynch, Tosu Mbedu, and Sheila Atim. This is a story, and of course, John Boyega. This is a story about the army of Dahomey. In the 18th century, this all-female army that controlled much of Western Africa and helped King Gesu assume the throne and overthrow the Oyo and Mahi empires in Africa. For those who do know, because I know there's a little bit of controversy surrounding this film, it is a reimagining. So like in actual history, the Dahomey army were slave traders. And that is true in the movie as well. They do bring that up, that they helped contribute to the slave trade. But you know, the rest of the movie sort of a reimagining, a fantastical revisionist kind of tale. For the most part, they were slave traders till about the end, I believe. So that's the one caveat to give this film. But other than that, I had a really good time. So curious to know you guys' non-spoiler thoughts on The Woman King. Brandon, let's hear it.
Yeah, man. So going into this film, I decided not to watch any trailers. I think that's just been recently. I've taken just a page out of actually Nathan's book. Is just I'm just not going to watch any trailers for things unless I'm like super, super like excited for it. Like Glass Onion, I watched the trailer for it. I think that's the first trailer I've watched in a long time. Nice. But back to the conversation at hand. I didn't know what I was in for when I first sat down to watch this film. I was definitely satisfied with it. I think the action sequences were really good. The soundtrack was killer. Everybody just brought their A game, and I have a feeling that there's going to be some Oscars lined up for this season to some of the categories in this film. So yeah, I was definitely satisfied with it. I think I'm going to bite my tongue a little bit and wait until we talk about spoilers, because I feel like I'm going to say something and I'll be like, oh, sorry, that's a spoiler.
I do also want to point out that this film debuted on Rotten Tomatoes at 100%. And that was like 100% with 30 reviews. So it wasn't like, you know, just like five or something. Like, so it was very well liked. It's obviously gone down now, but I believe it has been certified fresh at 94%.
That's still really good.
Yeah, which is amazing with like over 100 some odd reviews. So it's a well-liked film. Nathan, what did you think?
I think the best phrase to describe The Woman King, at least my experience with it, is the phrase expectation smasher. And what I mean by that is it can go a few different ways. Brandy, you're absolutely right. I despise watching trailers because I think they give too much away these days in an attempt to get people to come see the movie. Some trailers are unavoidable though. And I saw the Woman King trailer a couple times before some other movies I went to see. And I'm going to be honest, I don't think they did a good job with the marketing of this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it looked terrible. Like, mm-hmm. I think this trailer came on and I was saying to myself, that movie just doesn't look very good. But of course, we'll still go to see it. Expectation smasher in the sense that it crushed that. This is a phenomenal movie. And I was sitting there having a great time for a movie going in I thought was going to be poor. The other expectation smasher is Viola Davis taking on a role like this. Mm. She is remarkably, remarkably talented. If we're doing just a pure talent draft of actresses, she might be a number one or number two pick. So I'm not saying she can't do it. It's just we haven't seen her do something like this. And for her to take on a role like this, I was definitely skeptical of it too. Like, how is that going to work? How is she going to do? Can she really portray this extreme killer, like bad MF-er? Like, can she do that? And again, she smashed my expectations with how she was able to pull this off. We knew she could do it dramatically. Just can she be the action star as well? And there's a couple other things, but I'll kind of put a cap on it there. I think expectation smasher is the best way to put it with my feelings towards this movie.
Yeah, that's definitely an incredible way to put it. You know what's funny is like kind of off topic here, but we mentioned John Boyega is in this film. It's funny because like I think this is what the second film that we've done this month that John Boyega is like leading.
Yeah, because we did Breaking as well.
That's just the month of John Boyega.
Hey, but I mean, you want to talk about, you know, meeting expectations? I 100% agree with you, Nathan. Like when I saw that Viola Davis was cast in this, and I remember the casting announcement was like well over a year ago. I remember when I saw it and I was like, oh, you know, that'll be cool. And then I saw like the workouts she had to do for the movie. I was like, oh, cool. That, you know what I'm saying? That'll be interesting. You know, but you're right. Like we know she can crush dramatic roles, but this was an action role. And like in my mind, when I heard it, I thought it would be sort of Disney-fied. You know what I'm saying? Like, it would be visual effects and special effects. And you know what I'm saying? She wouldn't have to do much. Nah.
For the most part, it looked all practical.
Yeah.
She's obviously remarkably talented as the top tier actors in Hollywood are, but she is such an absolute powerhouse dramatic actress. Mm-hmm. When you think of Ma Rainey's Black Bottom and Fences and Get On Up and The Help, like she is not just a great dramatic actress, she is one of the absolute best. And it's not to say she couldn't take on a role like this. It was just so fascinating to see her kind of go outside of what she is so well known for.
Yeah. And crush it. Like that's the other thing. Sure. Like, I mean, when I watched this movie, I think that's the thing that really pulled a lot of people in is like, you have an actress who's best known for her drama, and she still brings that drama and that intensity to this film. But then you get to see this side where it's like, I'm also going to be a brutal, like vicious, stoic murderer. You know what I'm saying? And like, it's just, it's brilliant to watch. And I mean, like, she really encapsulated that role and to a T. And I was floored by it, like absolutely floored by it. And I think that's one of those things when, as an actor, when you've gotten this lane that people are familiar with you in, and then you just switch it up and do something so out of character, but that mm-hmm. it works. Like, to me, like, it reminds me of Denzel in The Equalizer. Like, that doesn't seem like his type of role, and yet he brings everything he has to it, and he knocks it out of the park. That was the same thing I was thinking of here with Viola Davis. Is just like, this isn't her bag, but she brought it. Like, it was just insane.
One more thing too, while we're talking about not only great performances, but paired with smashing expectations, is Tusu Mbedu as Nawi, just matching Viola Davis from a performance perspective. I mean, she comes in here as a relatively unknown actress. I mean, I didn't know who she was. She was in The Underground Railroad by Barry Jenkins, but really that seems to be her only real credit. Her being able to match Viola Davis in such a dramatic fashion was tremendous. And I mean, I listened to your guys' episode on Samaritan, where you guys just reamed the kid in that movie for his poor performance. And seems like lately there's a lot of child actors who have really struggled in films. I know, like, Cry Macho really stands out from last year. Children actors have really struggled in the last couple of years, and there hasn't really been that many performances off the top of your head that you can say was incredible. And she was great. She was great. I think it's a little unrealistic to think that she could get into Best Supporting Actress, but there's a chance. There's certainly a chance and a discussion to be had there.
Well, can you consider her a child actress if she's 30?
She's what?
She's 30.
Whoa.
She was born in 91.
There's no way.
Wow.
I literally just looked at an IMDb. I'm like, because her character was 20. I looked it up. She was born July 8th, 1991. She's 31.
Wow. She's amazing.
Wow. Okay.
Wow. Because so, I like legit thought she was like 16.
You know what? I'm not even going to apologize to her. I'm actually going to give her more credit for making that role believable. Right. I mean, Jesus, she had us out here. She had me out here convinced that she was a child.
Yeah.
And she is a whole 8 years older than me. And wow. I'm not going to apologize to her. I'm going to give her even more credit for the believability of that performance. Mm-hmm. Congratulations to her. I don't think she's going to get in the Best Supporting Actress conversation, but I think she should be.
I definitely agree that she definitely at least should be at least put in a four-year consideration.
I'm right along there with you, and I'm going to throw in someone else as well. Lashana Lynch.
Like, yes.
Wow. I've always liked Lashana Lynch. Like, I didn't care for Captain Marvel. She was my favorite part of that movie. She didn't have a major role in No Time to Die. She was still great. You know what I'm saying? I still enjoyed her in that. This is by far my favorite performance from her.
I think this is the most screen time she's had recently in a film.
Yeah, probably. And she owns it. I mean, like, the character is so interesting in so many moments. And we'll get into spoilers later, but it also is the character that has one of the most emotional beats in the entire film. And I enjoyed this character so much. And I think Lashana Lynch brought so much talent and skill to that character to make her not just believable, but like someone you genuinely cared for. And I dug everything that she brought to that character. And it was really, for me, one of the hearts of the film, because she was genuinely talented character.
What's even more impressive about Lashana Lynch's performance and character in this movie and the impression that she makes is she does it, and Brandon, you said this too, with quite a bit of screen time, she doesn't talk that much. She really doesn't. It's a very great and emotional performance without a ton of dialogue. I wouldn't even call this a dramatic, heavy hitting performance because she just doesn't communicate. And really, we haven't dove into spoilers yet, but you know, the final stages of her character arc really are the most emotional, and she's hardly talking during that time. So I think it's even more impressive what Lashana Lynch was able to do in this movie. And I can't remember, I literally saw this last night, and I can't remember her talking all that much in the movie. It's a very visual performance by her, and a great one at that.
100% agree. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know she has like three or four lines that stuck out to me. But yeah, for the most part, you're right. 100% visual. There's a scene in particular where I don't want to get into spoilers yet if you haven't seen it, but she has to do something extreme. And that was definitely a scene I felt personally. If you've ever injured yourself, you know exactly what I mean. Yeah. So any other thoughts before we break the seal?
I'm good going to tear it unless Nathan's got anything.
Nope, I'm good.
All right, let's do it.
Spoiler alert! Spoiler alert!
Now officially talking spoilers for The Woman King. If you have not seen it, stop here, go to the theater, check it out. It's amazing. And get back to us and find out why we think it's amazing as well. All right, so Nathan, kick us off with your spoiler thoughts now on The Woman King.
I mean, let's just bridge the gap on what we were talking about. I mean, at the end there, when Lashana Lynch's character has a broken arm, and they are her as well as Nawi, amongst a couple other characters who we haven't quite met yet, are being sold. Lashana Lynch knows how important it is for her broken arm to be put back into place and be functioning as close to functioning as a broken arm can be as possible, because not only is she going to need that to fight for her life, but she would probably be killed if she is deemed unuseful because of her broken arm. So when she asks Nawi to snap it back into place, I mean, that's got to be one of the most dramatic scenes in the whole movie. And then you walk into when she's being auctioned off and sold, and what transpires from there, definitely the dramatic weight of the film, I think, takes place right there. And honestly, skyrockets her into what I think could be a Best Supporting Actress nom.
I agree. There's one particular moment that really, like, I don't know about you guys, but my theater really responded to, which was when the, I don't know his name, Hero finds Tiffin, is evaluating her. And, you know, he's checking her out, and then he like touches her breasts and like squeezes them, make sure they're firm or whatever. And she's just staring at him like so coldly. Mm-hmm. Like, it was that moment where I was like, my entire theater was like, ooh, like, yeah, buddy, you're gonna die. it was so funny, because like when he saw her face and then like his reaction, it was priceless. That right there, like, encapsulates exactly what Nathan said about it being a visual performance, because that was one of those moments where you're like, you felt everything. You felt her rage. You felt her constantly going, like, thinking of all the many ways that she could murder this guy. Like, and it was brilliant. I thought it was a really, really well executed scene.
Yeah, I completely agree with you there. Back to the scene about her arm getting put back in place. Man, I tensed up in the theater when I saw that.
Oh.
As soon as she said, she's like, push my arm back in place, I was like, People around me heard me going like, oh no.
Yeah,
the same. My I think the worst part of that for me, as far as like the maybe grossest part of the movie, is when actually they're doing some form of tradition or ritual, and each individual sticks their arm out and they just like slice their arm open and blood pours out into this bucket. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my theater was like, including me.
You know what's funny about that is like, when she was talking to, I forget his name, I am drawing a blank on his name. Who's the guy that they that saved Anawi?
His character doesn't have a name, but the actor's name is Jordan Bolger.
Okay, all right. So when he's like talking to her through the gate, and she's like, "Oh, I can't tonight. I have blood ritual." I'm like, "Wait, what did you just say?"
Yeah, I mean, like, that's another thing that I really enjoyed about this movie is like, there's a emphasis on the culture and exactly who they are and what they do and what's sacred to them. You get to see that a lot in this film, like when Amanza, Sheila Tim's character, is performing a ritual that to help Naniska see what's bothering her, like how to get to the heart of her dream. I think that's like really impressive. Then what I really love is there are so many moments of dancing, mm-hmm. right, throughout this film with these characters, and different types of dances. And each of those, I believe, are specific West African dances. And it's just, I love that that's sprinkled in there. It's not really explained. You don't really get to know exactly which one is which. Someone who's familiar with those could probably tell us. But yeah, and I just love that that's sprinkled in there in different ways at different times for different meanings. You know what I'm saying? There's one after they do the ritual to, you know, join the army. There's, you know, the one that they do once they've completed their training. There's a bunch of them, you know, there's the one at the end, you know, once they're celebrating. And it's just visual nuances that I really enjoy. And I think that's a shout out to the director, Gina Prince, who's just a fantastic director. And mm-hmm. I think she nailed this project, because there's so many different ways to explore this culture and this identity and this story. And I just think what she did with it was very unique and brought her own voice. You know, we talked about John Boyega's other film, and the thing that really didn't work there was the directing was, anyone could have done that kind of directing. And I think what we see here is Gina Prince Blythewood bringing her own spin, her own style, and her own uniqueness. And you see it stand out, mm-hmm. As opposed to anybody else doing the film, which could have been definitely done differently.
Yeah. I'd like to mention is like something I noticed, like I saw a little, I guess what you would call like a clipper or something after the film.
Oh yeah, there's a little tag at the end.
No, not that. It's just like I looked it up online, and like they put it a great way. It's just like the director, they're like, yeah, they do a great job of, yeah, the action sequences and the weapons and fighting stuff are cool, but the main thing it has here is like that most other action films don't, is it has a heart, has a story it needs to tell, and that's exactly what happened here. Like I think it told a fantastic story from beginning to end.
I agree. I think the thing that caught me by surprise is like, yes, it's an action movie, and you do get a lot of action. Fantastic. Well, like way to satisfy, you know, those people who are diehard action fans. Absolutely. But then there's this dramatic story in the midst of it, and that was just as good, in my opinion. Like very gritty, very heavy stuff, And I think it does, it serves the story well, and it serves the talents that you have in this movie. Because mm-hmm. I don't think you get as strong of a movie if without that dramatic story, right? And it's almost a waste of the talent that you have if you don't have it. So, like, for me, like, that's really what worked for me, is that we get bloody, vicious, brutal action, and we also get this impressive and gritty story that I think works really well.
There's a couple of things that I want to talk about that you guys mentioned, and I guess off the top, to me, the movie that I think is easily comparable to The Woman King is The Northman, just based on very high level, takes place, it's virtually a period piece. It takes place with these, clan of killers that are out to protect their people, centered around one specific, genuine, absolute tank of a killer. And the production elements are fantastic. They're stunning. And I think they're just very similar. What I lacked in The Northman, what I found lacking in The Northman, was the story. Mm-hmm. I think it was very unoriginal and flat, almost. Like, I don't want to sit here and call The Northman a bad story, but it almost felt safe. It almost felt safe. Like, I'm about to spoil The Northman, so if anyone doesn't want to hear that, now's your opportunity.
We've also recorded our review of it, so you can always go back and check that out.
Sounds good. I mean, The Northman story, where dad gets killed, you go on a revenge story. I mean, that is so safe, and without the incredible action set pieces, I think The Northman is a pretty forgettable film. The Woman King has that heart that Brandon mentioned. It has that such unique story that a lot of these action set piece movies just lack nowadays. And it's got a real story. It's got a real heart. And to be honest with you, it has stakes, because Izogi, Lashana Lynch's character, actually dying and actually biting the bullet, as hard as that is to watch, and as much as that sucks, it's a great thing that it happens in this movie, because movies that are huge, huge bombshells of action like this need stakes. They need characters to die. And the fact that she did, now you can't have everyone come away unscathed. And I'm not saying that The Northman doesn't have death. It obviously does. But this works on so many more dramatic levels than The Northman does.
And I agree. Like, and it's not just Izogi who dies. Like, the other girl that she was training with, she also dies. And that was kind of a heartbreaking moment for me too, because I was like, oh man, like, this was a chick who just who whole purpose for staying was, she wanted to kill. She just wanted to kill, and she was very good at it. And I was stunned when she stands up and you see she's been shot, and I was like, oh, that's really what Nathan just said, man. The stakes are high because you think, because this is a vicious army and they're legend. Like, the people can't even look at them when they walk past because they're like they're so revered. You would expect it to end in a sort of everyone survives type of deal, but there are stakes. We lose a lot of great characters whom we really enjoy and really like. And I thought that was amazing. And there were several moments because of that where you feared for other characters. Like, is this person going to be? I really thought we would lose Naniska at some point. I really thought, the whole thing goes up and we lose Viola Davis as well. So I thought in terms of stakes, they really, really played it very, very well.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. Like, I thought just based off of how just the typical movie goes of, oh, hey, I'm going to be the hero and go out and save everybody. I thought she was a goner too. And I'm so glad, like Nathan mentioned, expectation smasher. I'm glad they went the route of, hey, yeah, no, she's just going to go raise shit and come back completely fine.
I think the other thing too that really stood out to me going into the third act was, I found going into the third act, I was like, okay, we've seen this type of story before, maybe not exactly like this, but we know where this third act's going to head. We've got a certain predictability aspect here that's on the horizon. And they didn't do that. It didn't fall into the predictability trope. It's not, doesn't have any massive plot twists. It doesn't go for anything massive that you didn't see coming, but there was a point in time where I was watching this last night and I said, yeah, maybe this is a pretty predictable movie, albeit it's still good. It's still really good, but it's predictable. And mm-hmm. they completely curved that in the third act. And I really appreciated that.
Now, do you guys think, okay, so like now he's a huge player for this film. Just like even she's just a huge game changer for Viola Davis' character. Do we think that had Naoi not been here to, like, let's just say when they went to pretend to be sold off to slavery and they had that ambush of just throwing the heads and stuff, do you guys think if she wasn't there to like help her out? I mean, yeah, let's just say she got out scot-free anyways, like survived that fight either way. Naoi going in there and helping her, and then her finding out she's the daughter, and then because even she was like, oh yeah, don't have any emotional attachments to your sisters because of like tears are bad. And as soon as she found out that the Shauna Lynch's character, Izogi, passed, I think was killed by them, you saw her starting to tear up, and she's like, burn the village, burn it all mm-hmm. to the ground, no hostages.
Yeah.
Do you guys so that being said, sorry, yeah. Do you think Naoi not being here to be that emotional like bringer back for her, do you think she would still have had that same emotion?
No, and I think it works to how well the story was written. You know what I'm saying? Like Naoi is technically our protagonist, right? She's technically the one whose story we follow and who is, you know, guiding these moments towards where they are. And I love that. I like that story. Again, this is where I say like the writing of this film, yes, it's not historically accurate, but it's also not supposed to be. It's a revisionist story, and you're taking it from the perspective of this one character who probably may or may not have existed. And you know, saying, and you're using that vehicle to tell this original story about these characters. I dug it. I genuinely dug it. I think Naoi is seriously one of the best characters in this movie, and she gets so much intention to her. So nothing that happens is really of an accident. It's like genuinely well written. And shout out to Maria Bello, who I did not know was a writer on this movie, and Dana Stevens also. I think they came up with a genuinely strong script for each of these characters and their development. Like that moment you're talking about when Naniska finds out that, you know, Izogi died. Like, yeah, you see that moment like where she's about to lose it, and then she says no, you know, she breaks that and she says, we're killing everybody. And like I'm like, that is such a pivotal moment for her character from everything that we've seen from her so far.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's just like from you, because you see her in the beginning of the film and she's making that raid on the village, but that's just to save everybody who's being held hostage there. Mm-hmm. And when they first popped out of the grass and they were looking at each other, I'm like, are they, she's trying to recruit them? And then she raises her sword and yells. I'm like, oh, okay, this is going to be a bloodbath. Mm-hmm. And just the progression of her character from that to this, like, I don't think Naniska had the intent of killing anybody in that village unless they stood in her way when she was freeing everybody out of that cage. And then she realized, okay, no, they killed one of our own, and my daughter, who I didn't know was my daughter up until like 3 days ago, is missing still. It's time to burn it down. And something that, like, again, expectation smasher. I found out his name, Malik. I thought Malik was gonna die. Because just based off of just like, you know how love stories go. Like enemy side, dude gets killed and something happens. I'm glad, like, even though he did cause the, even though he did fight back against the other side of the factor here. Who, what is his name? I am so sorry. Santo Ferreira.
Mm-hmm.
Him, and he killed him. He basically was able to kill, get him killed by all of the slaves he was freeing, which was awesome. Loved that scene. And so, where I'm going with this is, I thought even though he did all that, they would have just confused him for just one of the slavers, and I thought that he was gonna die. And I'm glad he didn't, because again, like, this is just a great term to use for this entire film, is expectation smasher.
Thank you. What were some things, guys, we've praised this movie quite a bit, what were some things that you guys found either a little bit lacking, or maybe if you have something that's tethering the negative side to say, what would those be? Because I definitely have a couple.
We needed more John Boyega. I think some of his, I feel like a lot of his scenes, other than the ending, like his final scene of the film, feel like most of it was cropped down. I'm not for sure, because I'm not sure how much he filmed with them, but I feel like he could have had more screen time.
He definitely was replaceable in this movie. That's not to say that he didn't do a good job, because he did, but with such limited screen time, he could have been replaced with really anybody. So yeah, I mean, fair enough.
I would say my only complaint really is, like, I think the action scenes are shot well, but they could have been better. You know what I'm saying?
Phoenix, that's... literally, you were taking the words right out of my mouth.
It needed less shaky cam.
Yeah, it was.
Oh,
it,
my God. It was a little, killing me.
Yeah, it was a little shaky. And I'm like, there were still scenes that were really crisp, really clear. You could definitely see the action and it really worked. And then there were others where you're like,
you guys,
I wish you'd clean that up.
I'm so happy you guys said that. That is far and away my biggest kind of gripe with this movie, albeit, like, we've praised this movie for what, like 35 minutes. So, like,
right.
Let's not act like I don't like this because I say a couple negative things. Mm-hmm. The film editing, the editing in the fight sequences is disorienting and yes. obnoxious.
Yeah.
The film editing specifically, sure, there's a little bit shaky cam, but the cuts and how they edit those fight sequences is genuinely obnoxious. Yeah. Like it's almost like giving me a headache. And it needs to be less editing. I don't know if it has to do with the fact that it's PG-13 and they're trying to show but not show too much.
This was PG-13?
I don't know if it's they let the editor kind of just cut it loose. Like, I don't know what happened, but it was from that first fight right off the bat. I thought, okay, editing is kind of atrocious in the fight scene specifically.
And I mean, listen, it definitely could have been worse.
It could have been worse, but still bad.
Yeah, like, it could have been way worse. Like, as someone, and I'm a defender of this movie, I really liked the 355, but it's editing, especially the fight scenes, is atrocious. Like, when I say atrocious, it is atrocious beyond all belief. And I don't understand this tactic, and it really bothers me because it seems to only be done in female action movies, where it's like we have to do quick cuts and sharp cuts and you know what I'm saying, there's quick editing and there's flash forwarding, and you're like, why are you doing this? Like, as someone, you know what I'm saying, who's like, I go to see every action movie, regardless of whether it's male or female led. And I'm like, all I want is clean shots. Like, clean shots. I think of the bus fight scene in Shang-Chi, right? That you could easily make that a messy, sloppy, shaky cam, you know what I'm saying, type of fight. And what do? They keep it clean. They're streamlined shots in front of the bus, behind Sean, you know, outside where you're looking at it. There's so many streamlined ways that they do that fight scene. And I'm just like, just take that and do that here. Like,
exactly. Like, it's just like, I have issues with that too. And like, just the shaky cam. One, I'm a WWE watcher. So like, I mean, they're getting better at that now that Vince is gone, but something like even in Captain America Civil War, they do a mixed bag of it, because you have on the one hand a super clean cut airport fight where you see a lot of the shots, but in the beginning of the film it's all shaky cam whenever Natasha's fighting somebody.
Yeah.
It's just like, we have that here where there's sometimes where it's like a straight clean shot, sorry, tongue twister. And it's great. And then you cut to someone else, and it's just like the cameraman's just going all over the place.
Yeah.
My other big gripe, not as much so, I think it meanders a little bit, specifically in the second act. And then right at the end, I think there's, after the giant fight, there's like 4 or 5 additional scenes post the fight where I was like, okay, we're ending now, right?
Yeah, that's the same scene. Way.
And I was like, okay, now we're ending, right? We have Viola Davis is crying. We're ending now, right? No, okay, they made up. We're ending now, right? No. Okay.
They're dancing
it's
now.
Like, okay, when are we going to end this? And it's not like I was dying to get out of the theater or anything. It's just, you know, we critique films for fun here. And I mean, it's like, okay, are we going to end this? Or how many more scenes do we need? Like, so it meanders there at the end, at the true ending. And I think in the second act, definitely maybe checked my Apple Watch a couple more times than I would have liked.
I'll have to agree there.
So I think what we can definitively say is that this won't be nominated for an editing Oscar.
I mean, hold on a second. Back up a second. You've seen Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, Jesus.
And that one.
Don't Look Up had the editing of a high schooler, and that got nominated.
Oh, God. So. You know what? You're right.
I'm like, this is coming from a big Bohemian Rhapsody lover. I love that movie, but damn, the editing sucks.
So transitioning into a good, really good point, Phoenix. Not of the conversation, because I feel like this could be of the conversation for almost every category. Like, what do you think this has a strong slash a fighter's chance of getting into? I think Viola Davis is a strong candidate for lead actress.
Original score.
And then I think score could be, and I think definitely costume design. I think it's probably a lock for costume design.
I agree.
I'm gonna go a bit differently. I'm gonna say it's locks are, I don't know if I would call these locks, but these are the areas that I could see it getting into and being solid contenders in.
Yeah.
Definitely score. Yeah. Like Terrence Blanchard, incredible composer. And he was also just recently nominated. So I think he'll probably see a shot there. I'm gonna give some love to the cinematography. I think Polly Morgan's cinematography was excellent. Like that shot of them coming out of the grass.
Oh yeah.
Brilliant. It's really well done. So that I think there's some love there. I don't know if it gets in, but there's some love there. I'm gonna say supporting actress. I'm gonna say that either Lashana Lynch or Tosu Mbedu snags a spot. I think what they bring to this film is impeccable, and
good.
I really wouldn't be upset to see them grab a spot.
I want to mention something while we're on the topic of this. So you know how you guys are going to see a movie, and like there's a lot of portions of the film where you're like, okay, I can see that winning an Oscar, I can see that winning an Oscar, mm-hmm. of just the different categories other than acting. I was so invested in the story, my mind didn't gravitate towards that at all.
Mm.
And I don't usually do that.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. I think it's just, you know, coming from having done it so long, you know what I'm saying? And obviously me and Nathan especially are really big on Oscars. Like it's always a constant subconscious thought. like you hear certain things, you see certain things, and you're like, oh yeah, I see the potential there. But you know what? It would not stun me if this popped up in original screenplay. Like,
I can see it.
Yeah. Like, it would not stun me at all, because I think it's a solid, solid screenplay. I'm also going to make a pitch for director.
Would this be considered original or adapted screenplay?
I believe it's original, because even though it's taken from technically from history, it's not adapted from like any other medium. So like, it wasn't a play, wasn't a book, wasn't a, you know, something like that. So right. I think it would fall under original. And yeah, like I said, I would make a pitch for Gina Prince-Bythewood and in director. I think, like I said, what she brought to this was so original and so unique. I don't see her getting in, but I could see her making someone's top 10, where, like, you know, she's at least number six. Mm-hmm. Like, so like, she might be the odd person out, but I would definitely make a pitch for her.
I think she could definitely get into director. She definitely could, but it's stacked right now. It's easy to say it's stacked before we've seen them, obviously, but like, it's easy to say it's stacked before we've seen the movies. But I mean, you're looking at some powerhouses. You're looking at Steven Spielberg, you're looking at Damien Chazelle, who are both, you know, best director winners. You look, the Daniels are probably a lock to get in mm-hmm. for Everything Everywhere. I mean, you've got Kaczynski, who, you know, could very well. You've got Aronofsky, you've got Sarah Polley for Women Talking, you've got Todd Field for Tar, you've got Iñárritu, who, you know, Bardo's not getting great scores, but that's the best picture winner.
Right.
Certainly it's stacked. I would like to see her get in, sure. And I think she has a chance, but it's really competitive this year. It's really competitive.
Very, very
competitive.
I agree.
But yeah, I would say if she manages to sneak in, it's deserving. 100% deserving. Again, having not seen the rest, she would make my five today. I don't know, once we get to the end of the season, perhaps things will change, but yeah. So any other thoughts before we give our final ratings, Brandon?
I think we've said everything we need to say, me personally.
Yeah. Nathan?
I'm good, man. This was a great time at the theater. Smash my expectations. And I really liked Viola Davis in this role. I think she's going to get nominated for Best Actress. And it's nice to see her venture outside of what she's so great at. I'm always a huge advocate for people who are so well known at doing one thing, taking risks and doing, stepping outside the lines and doing other things they love, whether that's athletes doing politics, whether that's, you know, maybe this is a little bit different with a dramatic actress doing an action role, but still it's outside of what she's normally used to. And huge, huge fan of that. This was great. I'm going to go back to what I said at the beginning, expectation smasher, and certainly going to venture into my top five of the year at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out, I looked this up and I can't believe that I didn't see this. Jamie Lawson, who's in this, she plays the one of the king's wives, the main one, I believe. She was in the Batman. She was the mayor. So yeah, very different performance there. That's amazing. And also Adrienne Warren, who played O'Day, I mentioned her, the girl who just wanted to kill and ended up dying. She played Tina Turner on Broadway in Tina. She's a Tony Award winning actress. Amazing. Like, and I didn't even recognize her, but like, you want to talk about, like, we talked about Viola Davis stepping out of drama and into this. A lot of people really came to this from different places, and I think really just tremendously showed what they could do. I think the only person here who's sort of dabbled in this familiar territory was Lashana Lynch. And like, we see how well she did. But everyone else sort of came from someplace else, and I think they showed tremendous range. I love Adrienne Warren. I hope she goes on to win or goes on to be in a lot more films, because I think she's incredibly, incredibly talented. See her performance in Tina. She's insane. But let's go ahead and give final ratings. Nathan, what are you giving The Woman King?
Yeah, this is 4 stars out of 5 for me. I think there's a lot of great things in this movie. We praised it substantially. I think there's a couple things that hold it back from being a little higher, but ultimately, man, that's not what this is about. This is about how phenomenal this movie was despite the terrible marketing. And really, I think a standout of 2022 at this point. So it's a 4 out of 5 for me.
Solid. I agree. We didn't touch on this enough, but like, what do you think the marketing failed at exactly?
I don't think it captured the dramatic weight of it. And it's hard to do necessarily in trailers and commercials and TV spots, in YouTube ads. It's hard to capture that dramatic flair, but really I feel like it focused on just Viola Davis and a group of killers being very barbaric. And it's like, yeah, that's part of it, but it doesn't even come close to touching what this movie's about. So I think it was just like, hey, do you want a really cool female action movie? Go see it. And it's like, that's not quite what this is.
Right. Could not agree more. I think they did literally like 25% of what the story is, and that's what they put out. And there was a lot more to it than that. But yeah, you're 100% right. I'm teetering, but I think I'm going to go a little higher. I think I'm going to go 4.5 out of 5. I just really dug this film. I loved all of the performances. Even like my complaints, they're going to be there no matter what. But I think as far as everything else was nailed so well, I really, really enjoyed this. So for me, 4.5, I dug so much out of this film. Brandon, where are you landing?
For me, I think I'm going with the safe answers. Solid 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
I think this film had everything that I loved in it. That's a stupid way to put it. This had everything to love about it, but I think the gripes that we brought up like bring it down just by a little bit. Yeah. It was a really solid film, and just I think there were just a couple things here and there like we could have just like, okay, yeah, this could have deserved more attention.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, there you have it, guys. 4 stars from Brandon and Nathan, 4.5 for myself. What did you guys think of The Woman King? Let us know. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Film Code Pod and leave your thoughts there. All right. So we are going to move on now to what's good.
What's good? What's good? What's good?
Nathan, since Brandon is going to have to struggle to find something good.
I got something.
Okay. You said you hadn't watched anything, so I wasn't sure. But all right, Nathan, kick us off. What would you recommend this week?
Yeah, definitely not an under the radar type movie. It's definitely one that if you've been around a while, if you pay attention to the Oscars, you've heard of, but I think just it's kind of been forgotten about. And that is the movie Up in the Air, led by George Clooney and Anna Kendrick. I freaking adore this movie. I think this is a phenomenal, phenomenal drama. Not only does it deal with such a niche subject, but there are so many great life lessons inside of this film. So many great life lessons. And it's got a phenomenally deep cast. I mean, we're spoiled in today's world with deep casts. You look at like Barbie and Oppenheimer and French Dispatch. But this was kind of before its time where you've got cameos from really recognizable folks. So Up in the Air, I freaking love this movie. It was nominated for Best Picture, so it's not a completely underground thing, but it's been forgotten about when we talk about movies of the last decade. So I certainly, certainly recommend that.
Absolutely. All right, Brandon, what do you got?
So it's not a movie, but a TV show has recently been put on Disney Plus that's been on for a while. But season 3 just came out and I watched it when I was younger and I just completely forgot about all that happened. So I started rewatching it. And that show is called The Orville.
starring Seth MacFarlane. And you would think, oh, it's a Seth MacFarlane, it must be just a straight comedy. No, it's actually a really good show. It's like, it has the drama aspects to do it to it, especially season three. Like the back half of season two and now season three has been fantastic so far. Like it's on the levels of, like, they start off, hey, what if we made kind of like a joke of Star Trek, to what if we actually competed with Star Trek? Nice. So overall, this show has been fantastic. And it's great because, like, season three is all, each episode is like an hour plus. So you're able, since it's not on cable anymore, you're able to, like, really dive into each episode now.
Dope. Yeah. All right. I've never been a Trekkie, so I don't know if I'll check that one out, but it sounds dope. For me, I'm going to recommend a movie that I saw just a few days ago, actually, after seeing The Woman King. This is what I went into. I went and saw the movie Barbarian. And I gotta say, that's one heck of a trippy movie. I love horror. I particularly love slashers, and those are sort of my favorite horror movies. This is that, but with a twist. I advise you to go in knowing as little as possible, as it is, it's gonna take you for quite a ride. But yeah, Barbarian in theaters, check it out if you can. I think it's amazing, and definitely one to, it'll make your top 10, I believe, of the year. So Barbarian for me, Up in the Air for Nathan, The Orville for Brandon, and that has been what is good from us here at Film Code. And now it is that time. My favorite time. It is time for Film Code. It was my code word this week. I am so excited to see what these guys came up with. Currently, just to recap, Brandon is in the lead. He has 10 points on the season. We are doing double points this year if you stump both competitors. The guest list is growing, and Nathan, you get to contribute to the guest list if you get this one correct.
Sweet.
So the guest list is higher than both me and Zach, which is sad. So so here we go. My code word was mother. It was from 2005 to 2015. Your supporting actor was the lead of a long-standing franchise, and one actress has been nominated for an Oscar this decade. So Nathan, you are our guest. You get to go first. I just want to say that, Brandon, if Nathan gets this right after not being on the show all season and you get it wrong, you suck and you should lose points. All right. So, Nathan, what do you have? What is your guess for the cohort?
Yeah, I'm confident to a degree, right? Like, I think this one fits the mold, but I don't think it completely fits the mold. How I went with this is from 2005. I went with supporting actor person first and tried to attack that. Was trying to think of some franchises. I came across Pirates of the Caribbean with Orlando Bloom being the supporting actor there. You could maybe say he was supporting actor in Lord of the Rings, but I know that that's such a deep cast. But looking at the movie Elizabethtown, directed by Cameron Crowe in 2005, not great reviews. It's Cameron Crowe. That screams Phoenix movie right there. And Kirsten Dunst is in it, who was, of course, nominated for Power of the Dog. And she's like the main person alongside Orlando Bloom. So everything fits the mold there. And in the description, I haven't seen this movie, but in the description, it talks about his father dying. So I'm sure the mother might play some significant role in that aspect. But regardless, I'm going with 2005's Elizabethtown.
All right. Excellent guess. Brandon, okay. What do you have? Or has Nathan beaten you already?
No, two films have fit the mold for this.
Uh-huh.
Which was actually Elizabethtown and a movie called Mama. that came out in 2013. Now, before I come to my full decision, let me explain why I thought Mama for a second. Is because it's led by Jessica Chastain, who actually was an Oscar winner for this decade. For this year, actually.
Yes, yes.
Supporting actor, Nicolaj Coster-Waldau played Jaime Lannister in Game of Thrones, and that's a long-standing franchise.
Okay.
And it fits the year. But Elizabeth Town also has that same freaking mold, so I don't know.
Where you going, Brandon?
I'm going to have to gravitate towards Elizabeth Town only because you said nominated and not win.
Okay. All right. Well, I am so happy right now because
you got 2 points on the board.
I got 2 points on the board, baby. Yes. What was it? So, your movie actually takes place in 2000. Oh, let me make sure I got this right. 2000. I want to say 10. Hold on. Let me get it right. I don't want to lie to you guys because I messed up last time and cost myself a point.
Oh, yeah. One of our other guests caught on to it. It's like, no, hold on a second.
2008. Yes. So your movie is actually in 2008. Your supporting actor is Pierce Brosnan, who was the lead of the James Bond franchise from 97 to 2002. Of course, you know, Die Another Day and Tomorrow Never Dies, that guy. And your actress who was nominated for an Oscar this decade is Amanda Seyfried, who was nominated for Mank in 2020. And your movie is Mamma Mia.
Oh, come on.
Huh? Of course, Mother. Mamma Mia, baby. You know me. I'm a musical guy. Come on.
Yeah, I guess supporting actor was the lead of a long-standing franchise. Yeah. I read that into was the supporting actor of a long-standing franchise.
Ah.
I guess that was a user error.
There we go. Gotta read. Reading is fundamental. Mamma Mia, 2008, directed by Philia Lloyd. Starring Meryl Streep, Amanda Seyfried, Pierce Brosnan, Stellan Skarsgård, and Colin Firth. That is your code word. And tell me you guys have seen Mamma Mia, right?
I've been forced to.
So there you have it. That is your code word. And I am finally moving up on the board. 2 points for me. Yay.
Where are you at now? 4 points?
Something like that. Something terrible. I think I'm at like 5.
I'm at 12.
Yeah, whatever. I will defeat Brandon before this year is over. So that is the goal. That is my challenge. Nathan, thank you so much for coming back on here, man. It's so great to have you. Let everybody know where they can find you and what you've been up to.
Yeah, guys, thanks for having me back. You can find me on Letterboxd at Nathan Pig. But more importantly, you can find my podcast, The End Credits Podcast, however you are listening to this. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. Very similar style show to what you're listening to here. So if you enjoy this content, go check us out over there. We've got Phoenix on a bunch of our episodes. And we take more of a reviewing classic movies approach. So we did Jaws. We did Whiplash. We did a couple others like Grand Budapest Hotel. So really, if you're interested in hearing more of my takes and hearing more of Phoenix, head on over to the End Credits Podcast and we'll hook you up. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks absolutely. For coming on.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. And Brandon, the loser for this week. Haha. Where can people find you, sir?
I may have lost the battle, but the war is not over. You guys can find me at FANTASMICEARS over on Letterboxd and check out what I'm watching. Haven't been able to watch much lately, just life has been kicking my butt lately. Work, school, you know, whole nine yards. But school is almost done with, so I should be watching more movies after that. But yeah, go check me out over there. And thank you guys again for listening to this.
All right, guys. And you can find me on Twitter at IMHOReviews1. That's the number one. And on Letterboxd under PA Cloudin. And as always, guys, please follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at FilmCodePod. And also check out the In Credits podcast, because we've done some cool stuff there as well. All right. We are out of here, guys. We will see you next week. Peace.